And welcome to Starter Set. My name is Ed Sylvester. This is
Samuel Bradley.
And welcome to the show that takes you deeper into the pages of Dungeons and Dragons. Sam. How's your Dungeons and Dragons week been, my friend?
Good. Building a character for an upcoming campaign, which I'm very excited about, and playing a really good campaign. The campaign that you and I play in as players took another step up on Tuesday, and there's fucking UFOs. They might be hunting wizards. It's a really weird sentence to say, but I fucking dig it. It's really cool. I also had the pleasure of reading some really nice reviews and stuff that people have sent in a little while ago. Admittedly, I should have done this last week. Apologies for that. But I'd like to shout out Jennifer Deacon and Little Underscore Wexican, who have both left us really nice reviews and recommendations on our social medias. So thank you both. It's really, really humbling and nice to read all that stuff. And yeah, if you send us in a review or an email saying something nice or even something a little bit weird, we'll probably read it out. We'll definitely give you a shout out anyway. So thanks to Little Wexican and Jennifer Deacon. It really means a lot when people shout out and tell us how much they enjoy it. Ed, how was your week in D&D?
Yeah, it was good, thank you. And thanks again to those listeners. Appreciate that. It's always nice to hear nice things. My week has been really fun, actually. Obviously we're in lockdown at the moment, but D&D is definitely proving the point of escape. So
100%, yeah,
and I had a blast on that game that you were talking about a moment ago, that on the Tuesday. A lot of fun, really nice. It's a bit of a silly campaign, like, I'm not gonna lie, we've got some daft characters in there, but it's a fun escape. And I sort of went away from both of the sessions I played in this week, and I kind of went and was like, do you know what, I really appreciate this game and the people I play with. And I thought I'd share that on the podcast, because I actually thought for listeners who, if you are playing in a campaign at the moment and, you know, you're enjoying it and it's proving to be a point of respite from a lot of, you know, less than stellar news,
yeah,
I think it would be nice to kind of spread that joy a little bit. So if you've got a electronic mobular device around, pick up your phone and just send a message to either your DM or one of your players who, you know, you've enjoyed doing something with within the game recently. Just to give them a bit of positivity. Hey, man, I really enjoyed that idea where you threw that pot at that burglar. Or, you know, hi, my DM. Really enjoying the interesting monsters we're fighting at the moment. Thanks very much. Just to spread a little bit of that positivity around.
Definitely. And I have to shout out the DM in the campaign that we play together, Isaac, is really good for, like, if you interact with the world enough and you affect sort of conflict between two NPCs, he just rolls with it and you just get to watch two people sort of duke it out because you set fire to a bush in a military compound, which also happened last week.
So that's my D&D week. Really positive sessions, really enjoyed it, so let's share that positivity around.
Absolutely, man.
In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, have a listen to this little advert right now.
Oh, that was a good little drop.
Hey, Guardians, we are the Destiny Show Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things Destiny 2. We invite amazing guests from the Destiny community to share their stories and discuss the latest topics from the world of Destiny. Check us out on Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, or live on Twitch every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will see you, Starside.
Thank you to all our friends and helpers and generally just really creative people on the Robots Radio Network. Ed, it's multi-classing on Miscellaneous Marvels. This is the final Miscellaneous Marvels. Who knows? Will it come back? Undoubtedly, because there's always stuff we've forgotten to cover. But yes, this is the finale of Miscellaneous Marvels, and we're going out with something of a really interesting bang, and something that I've only just kind of been brave enough to dip my toe into, and that's multi-classing.
Yes, and basically because Sam ultimately uses our listenership as a point of thermometering what he should actually do in his personal games, we kind of went, do you know what, we haven't covered multiclassing well enough. So let's have a conversation about that, and hence this. So, ladies and gents, strap on, pull your socks up, let's rock and roll. Multiclassing. First of all, I think we're going to go how it affects DMs, then we'll look into how it affects players, and then we'll have a little bit of a play around potential pitfalls, trials, tribulations, and where maybe the thought process is going from a wizard's point of view.
Definitely, because I think this is, as I have just done a little bit, spoken to a dungeon master and sort of said, hey, thinking about doing this, is it going to break stuff? Because you don't want, I mean, as is the kind of the feeling when I ran the Twitter poll, at least, was that, yeah, do it, but you can create a monster in an overpowered player who is basically wandering in their like Vision or Galactus and just has something for everything, which kind of eliminates a bit of the group dynamic, at least.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So for DMs, straight out, when you allow somebody to multiclass or a player to multiclass, you are categorically affecting the balance of the game, okay? So if it's your first time doing that, be very aware that that is something you can potentially do. And the other thing is, the players that like to multiclass, or at least the ones who come to it first, I find, are the power gamers, okay? They are the, how can I make the most efficient damage dealing badass possible with the least amount of effort? And that's where you start to see some discrepancies between the power levels across the group. Now, that's okay from that character's experience, and his experience or her experience of the game will probably be exactly what they want. However, the awareness has to be on how that affects all players. If you have, let's say, and you know, there is definitely sort of power fluctuations depending on which level you are. Sort of barbarians are fantastic at the beginning, but they kind of drop off at the late game. Fighters have a decent ramp, so do rogues, wizards, a little bit squishy at the beginning, but then become these ridiculous world-ending machines at the end game. So everybody gets their moment to shine, basically, when you're playing this. Multiclassing is the thing that kind of takes that out. So that's something to be very aware of, how you can then challenge that player without going, right, everybody multiclass, everybody do it now, because you might actually just be changing somebody's entire experience of the game, okay? So that's my big seal / stamp of DMs be warned.
Yeah, that does make sense, because if you were to do, I think as a player, it's kind of your responsibility to think of other players. It's not all about you. It is a group shared experience. And there's no trouble with doing multiclassing if you're doing it to do something interesting. If you get a little bit overpowered as a byproduct, I think that's okay. Obviously in cahoots with your DM about what exactly is you should be capable of. But I think also think about, and this is something that I've really come to with Tasha's, think about how it does affect the story and how it will affect the story, not just your story, but the stories of the DM, you know, the story, and then maybe the stories of the other players, because they will have just as grand designs, but they will have a different way of doing it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So that's kind of thinking, and brings me nicely into how multiclassing can affect the storytelling side of things from a DM's point of view, okay? So typically you'll start out your campaign and you kind of have a conversation with each player, and they say, I would like to be X. Those who have an idea of a build that they want to do will probably approach you there and then and say, I want to do this. Now, the way I approach this and listen to it, if somebody does want to multiclass, you ask them what it's going to be like and what they're trying to get out of it. If it's, I want to be able to do 100 points of damage on one bad guy in with a singular action, then use my action surge and then turn over to the next guy and smash out another 200 points of damage, that's when you kind of have to use your own DM power. Phenomenal DM power!
Power.
Thanks. to kind of control that. If you're okay with that happening, cool, no worries. But I think there's also a point where your player is asking you that to go, is this okay? Story-wise, an introduction of that, that's key. And obviously we see that happening, and a bit of guidance around how you can maybe change subclasses in Tashes, but it doesn't actually sort of have a conversation around how you can introduce another class into your story. A good example of this that we see from Critical Role, I'm going to go there because actually this is a very good example of it, is with Fjord's character of that warlock, yes, sliding into that paladin front.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is influenced by a cleric of the same sort of ilk and area, he's gone, do you know what? I've looked at you. You seem pretty mellow. You seem pretty sorted out. And, you know, Caduceus is an individual who goes, listen, everybody's broken, don't worry about it. But Fjord is kind of drawn to that, and you see that kind of evolution and that thought process, and it doesn't happen immediately. It's kind of set up, and then he goes, yeah, I think I'm going to take a level into Paladin. And that works from a narrative point of view.
And I think narratively as well, if you're looking at that kind of shift that we've obviously just described, where your character naturally over the course of the campaign goes in another direction, that's cool. It's great that the game is built to accommodate that. A rogue is never just a rogue forever and ever and ever. But also, if you're starting out, Ed, and you've come in and you have a little bit of the, well, this is what my character's gone through pre-game, if you like, and this is how it affects them from the off, do you recommend like just going, okay, I'll have a level of X, a level of Y, and then a second level of X? Or would you say stack it and then do five levels of X and one level of Y? How mathematically does it work? Do you take five levels of X and then you just take level six of Y, or is it two level ones?
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? How exactly does that play out?
So for those who have never looked into multiclassing, this is where we're starting to sort of dive over into the player area, okay? You have 20 levels of your character. And what you're basically going to do when you start multiclassing is you're going to start sacrificing some of those levels to go into the other classes. So for instance, your overall 20 level character, that will be made up maybe of 10 levels worth of wizard, 5 worth of fighter, 5 worth of rogue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other thing to be aware of as well is how your leveling up unlocks certain abilities. And this is again related to a little bit of power management actually playing the game. For instance, 5th level for both casters and I think most martial types, some of them get it a little bit earlier, is usually a bit of a, what would I describe it? Almost like a launch pad moment. For the melee players, a lot of them, it'll be where they get their double attacks.
Yes.
So they get to swing twice. For the casters, it's where they're going to get access to their third level spells, right? Which are, you know, your lightning bolts, your fireballs. The points where you start going, I've actually got some heft in this fantasy world now. So a lot of people will sort of take those 5 levels and then start to then readjust what they're going to experience from that front. Narratively, and this is where I think every time, and I think this is how wizards have done it, right? Narratively, you have to think, okay, I'm going to, as a player, that's when I'm going to plan these levels out and I've figured it out. And you know what? Sometimes there's actually just points where you go, I think the story's affected me in such a way that I am going to take a level in this class.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see a lot of people dipping into, and this is sort of a slight sidebar from the point that I'm trying to make here, but you'll see a lot of people dipping into 2 levels of fighter for things like Action Surge, because it's just such a fantastic all-round ability. But I'm going to come back, so let's put that sidebar to the side. Thanks, Sam. Narratively, for a player, that experience that you have within a game might inform your multiclassing decisions, okay? Let's say
that makes sense.
Yeah, let's say you're in a campaign where magic is inherently quite dangerous. Okay? Every time you cast a spell, something potentially negative happens.
Yeah.
at that point, your character might go, I'm not just going to blindly keep blasting out magic because this keeps, you know, causing me massive migraines. So I'm going to actually start training with the fighter just so he can show me how to hold a sword properly. And then you might then start taking a couple of levels into fighter, or you might start taking a couple levels into warlock. Maybe you're a wizard and you can no longer cast spells, and you're going, oh man, I don't know how I'm going to be able to deal with this stuff. What can I possibly do? I've read in my libraries about a creature that has ancient powers and can imbue people with the ability and knowledge to be able to wield martial weaponry without having to do any of that sort of training, because I need that now, because right now my magic is worthless. They go and do the reading, they have a conversation with a magical fey tree who was cut down, and actually now that spirit is part of the library and the pages within that library and the paper that is made there.
I love that shit.
Yeah. I may have thought about this character before, Sam. they make that deal, and then they've got, you know, they've got a packed weapon that they can then call upon it and start using that physical martial stuff.
Like that. So what if you want to start and you want to have a sort of Tasha's to the nth degree backstory, which says, because of this event, and yes, because I kind of want a few little early abilities from here and a few little early abilities from there, is that as effective, or should we not even be looking at it as effective? We should be looking at it as part of the story up to the point where the actual campaign begins.
Yeah, and this is the thing. This is the discussion that, you know, we're kind of having here, is we're basically going like, here's the mechanical thing and here's the narrative thing, right? Really, it's for you as a player to kind of figure out what you want to experience, and it's also for the DM to then okay it. So if you are a power gamer and you just want to be a badass, 100%, you're definitely welcome at tables. That's something you can do. If you're a storyteller and you want to have this checkered history with sort of many different avenues gone down, at one point I was selling timeshare and now I'm making shoes, and tomorrow I feel like being a baker, go for it. And that's how you kind of, you know, narratively step into it. So it really is up to you, but it's something that always has to kind of come from a collective understanding between you as a player and the DM.
Right. Okay, that makes sense.
Now, interestingly enough, the reason why multiclassing, I think, has come around, because, and I think the way that Wizards have kind of approached this is because we basically have these set rules and, you know, specifications for each class and race, okay? Typically.
Yeah.
Now, what Wizards do, and we sit there and we go, okay, here are my rangers and here are my rogues, but what if I want to make a rogue who is less about themselves and more about looking after people and has a bit of that ranger ability? Typically, what you would do then is you take a couple of levels of ranger to get those two together. I think what Wizards has done is they've spent time looking at what people like to build, and then they've started to introduce those as subclasses throughout the rest of the books. So in this case, we then see the rogue starting to morph into the subclass Scout.
Yeah.
Which is about exactly as rangery as you can get for a rogue.
There's also things like Eldritch Knight. That kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So that obviously, starting out, we've got, right, you've got the wizard fighter element with that as a point, and then you can see that kind of then tune into a more finely element later on with I've completely forgotten what it is. That's really annoying.
Is it the wizard with the sword? Was it spell sword? Fucking
blade singers,
battle mage, blade slingers. There you go.
Yeah, blade singers and battle mages, and we see those subclasses start coming into play where you're approaching it from the other side of things. So it's basically, again, around, I've got a character concept in my head that I want to see happen. I want to see somebody who fights for a death goddess. Okay, here's your rogue paladin combo.
But then you've also kind of got the Oath of Vengeance, is it?
Yeah, exactly. So there's so many different ways to kind of carve out these same characters, and the subclasses, as you go through, give you those options. the death row,
especially with with Tashes as well, because you do have things like the Psionic Knight in mm-hmm. Fighter, and yep. that's very intelligence based, dexy based. Yeah, you can strike, but all of your psychic abilities are still kind of tailored to the fighter. Although you do get, I think you get like telekinesis, you get like a mage hand you can move
yeah.
fucking people with, basically.
Exactly. And we start to the death rogue thing that mm-hmm. actually is then started to turn into in Tasha's the phantom subclass, where you're actually yes. using the spirits of the dead to, you know, buff your abilities and your spells. So mm-hmm. I think wizards have basically gone, here's multiclassing to make your characters as unique as possible whilst you're playing that, and potentially, you know, breaking the game and working it, and it's a game and it's a storytelling experience. It can't really be broken, let's be fair. As you're doing that, we're going to figure out and give you then later on these actual characters that we see appearing again and again and again. Here they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really, that's kind of all I've got to say on multicasting.
I've got a game.
Oh yeah, go on.
Here's one for you. So it's a little bit of sort of What's That Spell meets Sam's Character Box. Two time-honoured, if we're being honest, segments of this show. I'm going to throw you just two random classes. You've got to build me a character backstory, and then you do it back to me.
Okay, no, yeah, I like this. This is good. Okay. Go on then, yep.
They're not going to lend themselves to each other, Ed. I'm going to start with that up front. Okay. Fucking Artificer Bard. Go.
Okay, that's... Do you know what? So he starts out as a bard.
Mm-hmm.
Not very good. Okay, we'll go gnome bard, and yeah, he's not very inspired. He has real issues with creating music and putting feeling into his songs.
Ooh,
and you know,
okay.
all of his colleges are like, oh, fuck this guy. Like, yes, he passes all the class, but only just.
Yeah.
But what he started to doing is he started looking at music, and he's gone, do you know what? Musical notation is just maths.
Oh, dude.
And he started to then figure it out.
Yeah.
And then he starts to figure it out, and then he starts building things to try and basically put that maths into music. Mm-hmm. And then one day he comes out and he has this machine that he puts on his back, and he's like, here it is. And he's the one with the guardian, box. You know, the one where you make the Steel Guardian?
Steel,
that's the artificer
defender,
that he is?
Yeah, yeah, the Battlesmith, I think that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, Steel Defender, thank you. Yeah, that's the one. And that's the thing. And it's basically a boombox on legs, and that's how he makes his music.
So it's kind of like Run DMC meets Molchat Doma for fans of Belarusian pop music and electro music.
Plenty of them out there. But yeah,
hey,
that's right.
Love a bit of Molchat Doma. Hey, that's really good. You surprised me with that one. I thought you were just going to go, well, he just builds guitars or something. But yours is actually much more well thought out than that. Go on then, give me two. Hit me.
Here we go. So, I'm going to go... No, because that actually has a subclass for it already. See, they're getting me, which is annoying.
They're getting you.
I'm going to... here we go. Monk Barbarian.
Okay, so you start out as a barbarian, and I'm thinking that you're probably going to be a stout halfling.
Okay.
Who is really good at barbarian because they're really small, but they're very stocky, and they can sort of just wander through, and they can dodge out of the way of a lot of hits and just goes, oh my god, it keeps coming.
The voracious kneecapper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then obviously something happens, something pretty bad, whereby you blunder into a situation and you fuck it all up, and someone dies, and you don't die because you're a barbarian, you can take mm-hmm. a load of hits. And then you go off to the monastery, and you go probably in terms of the balance and being able to dodge and deal effective damage, probably open hand, I would say, for your monastery, because you've got that dexy dex from being a halfling.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and then you go into the monk stuff, and then it's just like the savagest of savage blows. Like, it's not just flurry of blows, it's like rage flurry of blows. Do you know what I mean?
I do, I get you. See, what I was trying to trip you up with here was their two approaches to fighting is slightly different. So the monk is all about inner peace and control, whereas the rage is the barbarian is about the rage and literally unleashing an internal element. So you've got, yeah.
I mean, you could go the other way. The monk whose temple is burnt down and, you know, step of the wind ain't going to save you next time, buddy. So you tap into that inner rage that you've been quashing down for so long and you become, then you take your levels of barbarian.
Nice. I like that. That's very good. Mm. Perfect. All right. Well, look, that actually a lot of fun. Enjoyed that show, Sam. Not going to lie. But all good things do have to come to an end. So let's say goodbye to the people. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Please do, you know, share the love. As we said at the beginning of the episode, tell your fellow players, tell your fellow DMs, you know, as we're going through all this, just some niceness. Just some niceness. Mm-hmm. Roll well, and we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Follow up. The barbarian monk. It's not a halfling. It's a Gangeani. Death from above, because then you get that gliding speed as well. Imagine that. That's terrifying. That thing comes out of the sky. Oh, he's wearing a robe. It's a foil, bitch. Gangeani! Bang. Bye, everybody.
Are you an avid player of the Elder Scrolls Online and looking to take your game to that next level? Well, the Red Diamond Courier podcast is here to help. I'm Bob Chachinski.
And I'm DogBark24.
We are two experienced players aiming to help others learn and improve through in-game knowledge and references.
From PvE
to PvP
and everything in between.
There's sure to be something for you in the Red Diamond Courier.
We hope you check us out. Thanks.
Looking for a Fallout audio drama? It's True Vault Escapades! That's right, follow the death-defying adventures of Detective Walter Camry and his vault girl Bunny as they solve the wasteland's biggest mysteries. From the dramatic Texas prologue to the high-stakes world of New Vegas, Walter and Bunny risk it all to crack everything from murders, slaver syndicates, and corruption at the highest level in post-nuclear America. True Vault Escapades. It's a Fallout show with a detective twist. Look for True Vault Escapades wherever you get your podcasts.